WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870. We've got a lot to get to on today's show, including recapping what took place in last night's Lions and Seahawks game that has a ton of controversy surrounded about it due to a late play that possibly could have given the Detroit Lions their first win of the year. We'll chat about that. Also, head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mark D'Antonio, he held his weekly press conference at Spartan Stadium today. Hear what Coach D had to say as his team now hits the road away from Michigan for the very first time this season, taking on Rutgers this Saturday. Also, we will invite Al Manfroni, MSU club football head coach, as Al talks about his team's big win, first win of the year for the very first game of the year for the Michigan State club football team as they just toppled Ohio State 45-0. Al will give us a recap on that game, and also we'll talk about that club's upcoming matchup against Oakland University this weekend. We'll also have Top 5 Tuesday for you, and of course, true Lions fashion, amid the controversy of last night's blown call by the referees, we'll bring you the Top 5 blown calls in sports history, all of that and so much more. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Tuesday, October 6th. In true Lions fashion, the Detroit Lions fell to the Seattle Seahawks last night in Seattle, 13-10, the final of that one. Now at 0-4, the Lions were so close to a win last night with Calvin Johnson's play with 2 minutes left in the game. Johnson was on his way to the end zone after a connection from Matthew Stafford when Cam Chancellor came from behind to force the ball free. Now, the controversy weighs in from what happened next when Seahawks linebacker K.J. Wright batted the ball out of the end zone, which is a penalty, but it was not called after the game. NFL's head of officiating, Dean Blandino, confirmed that the ball should have been placed, on the one-yard line where the fumble occurred, and the Lions would have been given, of course, another shot at possibly tacking on six. We will chat about the Lions and that controversial call in just a sec. Don't go anywhere. Yesterday, very cool event here. Yesterday, several MSU students got the chance to show off their basketball skills by attempting a half-court shot for free membership to the Izzo for the upcoming men's basketball year. How about that? Now, Izzo and several of the players stopped by the basketball court that was set up at The Rock to join in on the action. The season begins on November 13th versus Florida Atlantic, and the Izzo campout is scheduled for this Friday. Already about to be basketball season. Can you believe that? All right, well, sticking with the pigskin here, the much-anticipated Michigan versus Michigan State game is set for 3:30 p.m. on Saturday, October 17th in Ann Arbor. Now, the Spartans are 5-0, and the Wolverines are 4-1 with their loss to Utah to start the season. The Spartans are ranked number 4 in the AP poll, and the Wolverines at number 18. This game will provide a matchup that is closer than last, the years past, I should say. Now, last time both teams were ranked in the top 20 was in 2010, when U of M was ranked number 18 and MSU was ranked number 17. The Spartans won that matchup 34-17. Auburn receiver DeQuil Williams has been kicked off the team as of yesterday for failing to meet expectations of the program. Williams was the nation's number one junior college recruit back in 2014 and made a huge impact in his first season with the Tigers. He was one of the SEC's top receivers last season with 45 catches for 710 yards in only 10 games. With him now gone, the Tigers will have seniors Ricardo Lewis and Melvin Ray replacing his spot. In the AP High School football poll, Grand Ledge, who is 6-0, has moved to number 10 in Division 1, while Corunna, who is 5-1, is number 10 in Division 4. The Comets and Cavaliers are among 9 teams from Mid-Michigan ranked this week. Ithaca remained number 1 in Division 6 this week, receiving all 5 first-place votes. Lakewood, which is still number 3 in Division 4, received a first-place vote. The other Mid-Michigan teams ranked include DeWitt, number 4 in Division 3, Portland, number 2 in Division 5, Lansing Catholic, number 6 in Division 5, Pomona Westphalia, number 4 in Division 7, and Fowler, number 7 in Division 8. How about this, folks? The baseball postseason begins tonight. That's right, in American League wild card action, the Houston Astros will take on the New York Yankees. That first pitch is scheduled for 8 p.m. and can be seen on ESPN. And New York Yankees pitcher C.C. Sabathia will not be a part of the Yankees squad tonight in that matchup against the Astros because he is checking himself into an alcohol rehabilitation center and will miss all of the postseason. He announced that on Monday. Sabathia went 6-10 in 29 starts this year, the worst record of his 14-year career for a season in which he pitched at least 150 innings. He also had a 4.73 ERA, 137 strikeouts, and gave up a career-worst tying 28 home runs this year. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on any of those or anything on your sports noggin, call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, let's begin the show.
Beforehand, as he's fighting for the extra yard. What a punch by Cam Chancellor to knock it out of the back of the end zone.
Unbelievable. The effort of Chancellor may have saved Seattle's season, Mike.
Yeah. That's how we begin today's current sports. I tell you what, those referees, they are some smooth criminals, folks. I tell you, at least when you talk about last night's game, right? The Detroit Lions falling to 0-4 on the year. And I don't know about you guys, but watching that game last night, I was just even shocked that the Lions hung around like they did throughout that entire game against the Seattle Seahawks, a team that is always good in the National Football League. They are one of the juggernauts in the NFL. And the Detroit Lions entering last night at 0-3, giving them a bit of a run for their money. But the moment that everyone is talking about, a moment that I didn't even realize would be a moment when it occurred, because I had no idea about the rule. But, you know, the rule comes, is actually, you know, to get more specific about it, is actually Rule 12, Section 4, Article 1 of the NFL's official book. And it's, of course, entitled Illegal Bet. Now, this is exactly what the rule states. It is an illegal bet if, quote, a player of either team bats or punches a loose ball that has touched the ground in any direction if it is in either end zone. And the penalty is if the foul is on the defense. It's an automatic first down. So when looking at that play last night, again, Calvin Johnson, he receives the football from Matthew Stafford. Calvin Johnson makes his way up the field. He is literally about a foot or two away from the end zone when Cam Chancellor. What a play. First off, you got to give a lot of credit to Seahawks safety Cam Chancellor, who had, you know, the train of thought, the wits to, you know, last minute. Because, again, Calvin Johnson is literally feet away from crossing the end zone to put the Detroit Lions on top late in the fourth quarter. Feet away from having the 12th man go up and awry in disgust. Just feet away. And Cam Chancellor, which this is what makes him one of these studs in the NFL, him having the presence of mind to punch the ball out of Calvin Johnson's arms, just short of the goal line. And again, the penalty I just wrote, this comes into effect because the ball then bounces into the end zone, and then you see Seahawks linebacker KJ Wright knock the ball out of the back of the end zone, which is illegal. Again, that would have renewed downs for the Lions. That would have put the football on the one-yard line where the fumble occurred, and the Detroit Lions could have possibly punched it in, maybe with a jump ball to Calvin Johnson in the back of the end zone, or maybe a run up the middle by Ameer Abdullah. Who knows? But their chances were pretty high of scoring with the football being placed on the one-yard line. Could have totally changed the entire conversation this morning, this afternoon, and moving forward for this ball club, because we all know the Detroit Lions desperately need a win right now. And falling to 0-4 now, again, and we kind of saw the writing on the wall. The Lions losing isn't a surprise here, folks. Isn't a surprise whatsoever. Not many people out there really felt as though the Lions would beat the Seattle Seahawks at home. The surprise coming from all of this is that the Detroit Lions were just feet away from winning that game. So where do you go now? You know, it's got to be so frustrating. Anytime something like this happens, and it's happened in the past, I can go back to the Detroit Lions and Dallas Cowboys game. You guys know what happened in that game. Happened not too long ago, folks, in which the referees also got that one wrong. And, you know, I get it. Referees are human. You know, they make mistakes. And again, I didn't even know that this rule even existed until SportsCenter popped on with Scott Van Pelt, and they immediately started to talk about it because Blandino came out and said, it shouldn't have went down like that. I had no idea that was even a rule, that you can't bat a fumbled ball out of the end zone if you're the defense. Had no idea. And then, you know, everything hits the fan. So there are a lot of angry Detroit Lions fans out there, and justifiably so. Now, look, we can harp on this play all hour and say the Detroit Lions should have won this game. But at the same time, folks, I want to remind you, again, I sat there on my couch and watched that entire game last night. There were multiple opportunities for that Detroit Lions offense to get it going and possibly to put the game out of reach and not even, you know, have to have a late game drive to put points on the board to beat Seattle. If you remember, Seattle had two crucial turnovers. Lockett, you know, he's returning a kick, you know, returning a punt out of, you know, one of the many three and outs for the Detroit Lions. It hits his chest. The Lions recover. It gives them great field position. And what happens? They go three and out once again. Golden opportunity there. And how about the other turnover? And I want to give props to Ziggy Ansah, because Ziggy Ansah was a complete man. I got to give credit as heck to that entire Detroit Lions defense. They played very well against a talented Seattle Seahawks offense. Russell Wilson, I mean, my goodness, how good was he, right? Russell Wilson was fantastic last night, but at the same time, the Detroit Lions offense was able to contain the blunt of that offense. It was impressive. But anyway, Ziggy Ansah, if you remember the play where he rushes Russell Wilson, who, by the way, was eating grass all night, he causes a fumble, Detroit recovers, and they have another opportunity to possibly go down the field and score. And they squander that one as well. So, again, before you guys call in and start to really harp on that play, which, again, I agree, the referees blew it. The Detroit Lions could have very well walked out of there with a W, with finally a W. They are now the only winless team in the NFL. Okay, because, of course, the New Orleans Saints got that win against the Cowboys on Sunday. And I know Isaac's pretty happy about
Woo-hoo.
That. Yeah, there you go, right? So now the Lions are the only winless team in the entire NFL. That's crazy. So they very well could have won last night if that play goes, you know, a different way. But that's sports, folks. But you can't cry on that one play, because there were multiple opportunities for that offense to get something going and to put points on the board. So let's not sit here and ignore that as well. And I want to get your thoughts. Are you an angry Lions fan right now? Or are you realistic about it and said, hey, we didn't expect the Lions to win last night. And the fact that they did have an opportunity is looking at the glasses half full rather than half empty, right? So call in. I want to get your thoughts on it. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Of course, Lions head coach Jim Caldwell was asked about the call after the game. And he said, quote, "I'm not going to even go there. Talk to Blandino and the rest of the guys. They'll explain. What can you do? You're not going to cry about it. That's for sure." And that's the response that Jim Caldwell should have had last night. But I can only imagine what what he told his team behind closed doors, or what he told his homeboys when they called him up and said, "Jim, you almost had him. What's going on there?" Because if I'm the head coach of the Detroit Lions, if I'm Jim Caldwell and I'm 0-4, and, you know, if that call goes, you know, if I get messed over like that with a call of that nature, I'm mad, and you should be mad. But again, I'm a big picture guy, folks, and the Detroit Lions had multiple other opportunities to come out with the win in Seattle, which would have been huge. Oh, the Honolulu Blue. They always find a way, a new way to break your little heart. Call in 517-355-9527. I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, did you catch last night's game?
Yeah, you know, I caught most of it, including, of course, the fumble. My takeaway is, I'm mainly with you, Al. I've got to say, you play well enough the entire game. The defense, you called out Ziggy Ansah. Really, the whole line was pretty good in that whole game. They were impressive against a solid rushing attack, and they had 6 sacks throughout this game. The game, it was big. You saw Russell Wilson rattled on several occasions. He had to get out of the pocket to make plays. So Lions defense, hey, kudos to you. As far as the offense goes, you know, you think without allowing any sacks, with having a good play call diversity, you'd be able to score once, put one touchdown on the board. They weren't. It's, you know, it's gotten to a point where it's ridiculous. Matthew Stafford, 35 attempts, 200 yards. That doesn't cut it. Calvin Johnson, 7 interceptions, 56 yards, and a fumble, I think. A pretty important fumble. So, you know, I get if you're angered or annoyed, or nobody's going to be annoyed. You're pretty angry with that call if you're a Detroit Lions fan. But at the same time, it's a fumble. It's not like he was down or across the end zone and then fumbled it. He fumbled it. And it should have been Seahawks ball either way, no matter what. So, Yeah, I just can't get the perspective of somebody who says Lions were totally robbed once again. Yes, maybe it was the wrong call, but this is not the same scenario as we've seen in the past. The Lions should have won this game. It's not like they did everything in their control to win this game.
Yeah, they should have, you know, and it was really shocking. I mean, to see that Lions defense, I mean, you know, the D, you know, played superb. They really did. Again, we mentioned Ziggy Ansah. He had 2 sacks, 1 forced fumble in recovery. James Ehedebo, he had 8 tackles and a forced fumble. Kerryon Reed's scoop and score as well. You know, again, 6 sacks, as you mentioned, Isaac. 10 QB hits on Russell Wilson. But at the end of the day, that offense just is, it's nasty. It is nasty, folks. The offense was just bad. And, you know, when looking at why this offense struggles, it's pretty puzzling. And I think it starts with, again, something I've been harping on since the very beginning of the year, that offensive line. Again, it's almost like, you know, Matthew Stafford knows the pressure is coming. And whenever that pressure comes, he realizes that, again, he's been hit, you know, all of last year. I think he was the most hit quarterback out of the entire NFL, and that now protrudes over to this year. He knows that it's coming so quick that you see him make at times sporadic decisions, and then you saw last night him just say, you know what, I'm just going to throw this away. I'm not trying to get hit. Let me just run out of here and throw this away. And that's exactly what happened. Also, another thing that I want to bring up for this team is discipline. The Detroit Lions didn't do themselves any favors last night because – I tell you what, I saw multiple penalties that hurt them in crucial drives. Again, you know, I mentioned those 2 turnovers by the Seahawks in which the Lions did not capitalize on either one. You know, the miffed punt return by Lockett, recovered by the Lions, great field position. They go 3 and out. They get a penalty on that drive, I believe on 2nd down to push them back. So they're looking at a 3rd and long. And then the Ziggy Ansah, you know, pressure on Russell Wilson. They recover that fumble. They can't do anything there. They also get a penalty there as well. So they shot themselves in the foot multiple times. Guys aren't disciplined. They, you know, penalties everywhere. The offense looks so stagnant. Ameer Abdullah can't shake loose because there are no holes to shake loose into. It's bad. It's really, really bad. If anything, If there is anything to build upon from last night's game, it's that defense. The defense has to keep showing up like that each and every game. That's very, very encouraging. But you know, and you know, I went on social media after the game happened, Isaac. And again, you know, of course, I grew up in Detroit. I'm from the west side of Detroit. A lot of my you know, friends are Lions fans, and they had some hilarious memes floating around. And, you know, some of them even texted me last night, and they believe that the Lions are cursed right now. They believe that they are cursed, and they will always be cursed. And that's legit when you look at how that game ended. But let's be real, folks. I'm a realist. I just thought that there were just multiple occasions with the Lions in which the Lions did not capitalize it that sort of summed up everything when looking at what occurred during that last moment, that Calvin Johnson fumble. So what do you think? Call in 517-355-9527. Let's go to line one. We've got Kirk from Grand Ledge. Kirk, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing just fine, Al. How are you?
I'm fantastic, man. Thanks for calling.
Hey, so I, too, was sitting on my sofa last night to watch the game, except I had this interesting experience. I managed to fall asleep right after halftime, and then wake up as they're lining up to kick. The Lions are lining up to kick the extra point that apparently had been just blocked before or something, but Seattle had a penalty and whatever. And it's like, wow, 13-10.
Right, right.
How interesting. God, they must be playing pretty good because when I was watching them in the first half, they stunk.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then as I'm watching more, they're getting that last drive, and they get that first down on the last drive. And Gruden says, that's their 2nd first down of the half. The first one came off a penalty. And it's like, how in the world are they even in this game?
Exactly. Right.
You know.
So, and it's because of the defense. That defense kept them in the game at the end of the day, Kirk.
I appreciate that. I am now concerned, however, that Haloti Ngata's having an MRI on his knee, which you know they don't have an MRI unless they think there's some really good problem going on. And Tyron Walker, who played a good game, is also injured. So the defense is now going to start falling apart because they're on the field all the time and they're just going to get hurt. But here's my take on that last play, the lack of a penalty, okay? I'm confused as to why K.J. Wright did that. Because when he touched that football in the screen on my TV, there was nobody else around him.
Nobody.
All he had to do was just grab it and take a knee, and there's no issues here.
Right.
So to me, the reality is it was no harm, no foul. Yeah, they blew it, but it was really no harm, no foul. He was going to get possession of it. They were going to get the turnover. The bigger issue is, why the hell can't Calvin Johnson hold on to the ball?
I'm telling, and you know what? And looking at how this offense has struggled all season thus far, Kirk, when Calvin finally, you know, gets a chance to get loose and possibly get his first touchdown of the year, that would happen, right? I don't know. I mean, he got corralled. I mean, there were three Seahawks jerseys around him. I mean, he's trying to dive. He doesn't see. But you also got to give a lot of credit. I give a lot of credit to Cam Chancellor because there are not a lot of defensive players that would have, you know, the presence of mind to punch the ball right before Calvin, you know, crosses the pylons.
That was absolutely an excellent play on Chancellor's part.
Right.
But to me, the thing is he's – Calvin Johnson has three guys around him. Instead of trying to make that extra oomph to get in the end zone, secure the ball, and now you got it down at the 1 foot line. And there's a minute and 45 left.
Exactly.
But I agree. You know, the Lions come up with new ways to lose. I mean, they are the masters. They should be applauded for being the most creative team in the NFL for figuring out ways to lose.
Yeah, you're right. I wish they give out awards in that regard, right?
Now, I just want to switch topics for just 1 minute because when you were doing the headlines, you brought up something. You said that postseason baseball play starts tonight, okay?
Right.
And it's not even a series. It's the one-game elimination
wild card
thing, okay?
Yep.
Now, when you said it starts tonight, my initial reaction in my head, keep in mind, I'm an older guy, okay?
I got you, brother.
Okay? My initial reaction is it should be ending tonight, okay? And I can tell you for a fact, when I was a kid, 1968, Game 7 of the World Series in 1968 was played on October 10th because that was my brother's birthday, and I always remember that.
Was it? Wow.
Yes. So,
that's,
you know,
crazy.
The postseason for baseball should be getting over in the first week of October, not just starting.
Why? I wonder. So did they push up the baseball season? Back in the day. I mean, when did it make that change to where it bleeds over into late October?
Well, no. Number one, the playoffs expanded. Okay.
Exactly.
Because you have to remember in '68. It was the winner of the regular season in the American League played the winner of the regular season in the National League. There weren't any other playoffs. It was just the World Series.
Right.
That was one thing. The other thing was that they used to play doubleheaders every Sunday. Okay? So the season didn't stretch out for quite as long. So
gotcha.
you compacted it a little bit. Now, there were lots of Mondays after those Sunday doubleheaders that they had off, but for the most part, the season was a little bit smaller. And the other part about the whole thing was the World Series back in '68 was played during the day. Okay?
Right.
I went to a Catholic elementary school, and the good sisters at my Catholic elementary school were amazing Tiger fans. And I can remember the whole, you know, from 1:30 in the afternoon until school got out at 3.
They had it on.
They had it on the PA system.
Oh, man. That's cool.
So we basically sat there reading or doing our math homework or doing whatever, listening to the Tigers stuff, and then tried to figure out how to get home as fast as we could to see the rest of it.
Exactly.
You know.
That's interesting, though. So is your quarrel with, you know, the playoffs starting so late into the year Kirk, is that, you know, maybe, you know, it gets a little cold outside. I mean, what's your quarrel with it? Is it the weather or what is it?
All the above. It loses its relevancy when it falls this far into the year.
Right.
To me, it's the same argument, even though it's the postseason, as opposed to the start of the season. To me, it's the same argument as hockey starting in the first week of October. Mm-hmm. Or basketball starting in the second week of October or whatever, the regular season kind of thing. You know, it's like when you start that early and you're splashing over into the football season and everything else, it winds up losing relevancy.
It creates a mess, doesn't it? And then you're competing, you know, with other sports like the NFL, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope. I agree, Kirk. I'm with you, man. If they move it up, I mean, and I've always been the component. I think they should condense the games as well, but that's another riff for another day, right?
My thing is when they expanded, and I think it was 61, that's when they expanded to 162 game season. Before that, they played 156 games.
Right.
Now, to me, if they went back to 156 games and played doubleheaders, and that way your season isn't quite as long, and you're looking at the end of the playoffs being the second, at the worst, third week of October instead of going into November 2nd,
mm-hmm.
they would have a much better opportunity, much better product. But as it is, I'm not watching any of it.
With all that said, right? Oh, Kirk, great call and great perspective, my man. We really appreciate it.
All right.
All right. Again, folks, if you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that may happen to be on your sports noggin or anything about, you know, last night's Lions and Seahawks game, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will invite our guest for today's show. His name is Al Manfroni, MSU club football head coach. He'll talk about his team's big win over Ohio State this past weekend. You don't want to miss that and so much more. You're tuned into Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Before we move on, I got to remind you all that, hey, Current Sports TV tapes tomorrow night at 6 p.m. If you want to be a part of the live studio audience, all you got to do is simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. I will have the privilege of sitting down with a man who has made quite the impact when you mention Spartan football. He's actually was a member of the 1965 National Championship MSU football team, and now an author. He has written, I believe, two books now, and one profiling his brother, who was diagnosed with chronic traumatic encephalopathy. I don't want to give the entire story away. He has an incredible story. His name is Jim Probasol. All right, folks, you want to be in the house for that. Jim is, he's actually driving in from Chicago to be a part of the show. That's where he now resides, and he just has such an intriguing story, and he's an incredible writer. So you do not want to miss that, folks. Again, if you can make it tomorrow night at 6 p.m., again, go to WKAR.org, sign up online for free, and then all you got to do is just show up here at the Communication Arts and Sciences Building right here on the campus of Michigan State University, or if you happen to miss the live taping, if you want to still view it, you know that Current Sports TV airs each and every Thursday night. We moved from our 10 p.m. shift to now 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV. All right, folks, well, let's get to our guest for today's show. Al Manfroni is the MSU club football head coach. And I tell you what, his squad is coming off a very, very nice win over the Ohio State Buckeyes, an impressive 45-0 victory on Sunday afternoon in front of about 200 family, friends, and fans at Hope Sports Complex. To now join me to talk about that win and implications for that win as the season moves on is Al Manfroni. Al, how you doing? Is he there? Do we have him? We don't have him. Okay, well, we'll call him back then. Live radio, folks. It happens. Let's dial him up once again. I know we had him when we went into the first break here, so we'll get him back on. But, yeah, I mean, Al's team is really an incredible team. They have a quarterback who's a junior by the name of, if I can bring it up here, Vinny Costanzo. Yeah, Vinny is a junior quarterback. He actually threw 3 TD passes, just 1 INT. Again, a 45-0 shutout. The defense played unbelievably well, and we're still trying to dial him up and get him on. Do we have him? we do have him. Is Al on the line now? Al, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I don't know what happened there, man. We had you, then you went away for a second. How you doing?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. It just was all static and then disappeared.
Hey, technology, you got to love it, right? It's live radio for you. But, Al, first off, my man, congratulations on the 45-0 shutout victory over the Ohio State Buckeyes. A pretty cool way to start the year, right?
Well, you know, it was. We learned a lot about ourselves this last weekend. It was what I would consider to be a complete team win. You know, we had guys coming from all over the place, you know, coming up, making plays, doing some things that, you know, we had hoped that they would do. But I think it was on both sides of the ball, we were definitely firing on all cylinders, which was, you know, really good to see. All the hard work, all the practice paid off.
Yeah, it certainly did. I mean, you know, you shut out a pretty good team in Ohio State, a 45-0 victory for you guys. I mean, did it kind of shock you at the way in which you guys won, Al, or is this team that good?
I think, to be honest with you, I think we're that good. We put together a bunch of guys. You know, we have a bunch of guys who've never played football together before, ever. And, you know, we've been practicing on and off since last spring. And then picked it up in the fall and came together and, you know, really have methodically just gone through the steps to create a cohesive, you know, team spirit, if you will. And, you know, they went out on the field and they just, you know, they battled and they battled together. That was something that I was really happy to see.
Now, what's also impressive about this win, Al, is that, you know, anytime you have a shutout, you know, you guys put up 45 points, so the offense was particularly in sync, it seems, throughout the entire game. What do you preach to your team, you know, as that game moves on, when you start to stretch out that lead score by score to make sure that they don't let their foot off the gas?
Yeah, no let up. No let up. You know, I remind them that you know, great teams in the past history have you know, done things like this and lost it in the second half because they became complacent. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't, once you have them down for the count, you don't let it up. You just keep applying the pressure. And, you know, you make sure that you get the job done. Before the game started, I told them, I said, the word for the day is finish. And I said, you know, finish means you finish everything. You finish the blocks. You finish the run. You finish the tackles. You finish the game.
And that's exactly
many,
what
many
they
teams
did.
Don't finish. And
yeah.
I said, we are going to come out today and finish this.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, that's exactly what they did, Al. And again, I want to bring up a few specific players for you guys. I mean, you have a quarterback who had a pretty impressive, you know, afternoon. Junior quarterback Vinny Costanzo, 3 touchdown passes. How impressive is he?
You know what? For a first time out, and again, not knowing what to expect, you know, he stepped up to the plate. And he did what he had to do. I mean, there were a number of times we had a breakdown on the offensive line and Vinny had to scramble, but he kept his head. And, you know, he kept his head and kept looking downfield. and on a number of scrambles was able to make a throw downfield and get us 10-15 yards. So he did real well. I was very proud of him. He stepped up and he made it happen.
Now, who are a few other leaders for this team as well? I always say, the quarterback position comes with so much pressure that naturally you have to be a leader, and that's exactly, I'm sure, what Vinny has been to this team, even though in the season's infancy. But there are also, I'm sure, players everywhere that have made a tremendous impact throughout practice mm-hmm. as you guys now begin the season. Who are those individuals and what makes them so important to this squad?
Well, I'll tell you what, our special teams really, really stepped it up. Higgins, our kicker, he was 6-for-6 in extra points and kicked a field goal. In the first half, every one of his kickoffs was into the end zone, in and out of the end zone for zero run back. So in the entire first half, we had zero run backs on our kickoffs. Which is, really anytime you can do that and pin them back in their own territory, that's a tremendous weapon to have. It's a good tool, and I have my hats off to him. He did a great job for us on Sunday, and he did really well. We had a couple of great some great play out of Wiley, our corner. He had a pick six, as well as a number. He also was deep back for us on returns, and he had a number of long run kick returns. So he's really stepped it up to the plate. We had guys all over the field. We had Cook. One of our defensive tackles, he had, I believe, 7 tackles and two or three for losses. I think we sacked the quarterback 6 times.
Oh, boy, yeah.
So, there was, like I said, there was just guys all over that were really just stepping up to the plate. Schlossberg, our other defensive tackle, had played a great game, really anchored down the middle of that line. Mm-hmm. It was good all over. Like I said, it was a great team win for us.
Al Manfroni, MSU club football head coach. Again, they are just coming off a 45-0 win over Ohio State this past weekend. Now, it's so interesting because, again, Al, this is a club football team. It seems as though you have a lot of talent on both sides of the football. I mean, when these guys came in and tried out and practiced with you guys, did you kind of know the sort of gym players that you had going into the year?
We had an idea. We knew we had a team full of athletes. We just weren't sure what to expect. But as time went on and, guys started showing their athleticism and their knowledge of the game, their ability to adapt to our system and that kind of thing, we started to understand more about, just what we had. And it's been great to see. We think that, we'll continue to get better as the year goes on. With a 45, with a 45-0 shutout, that's great. Mm-hmm. It showed a lot of our strengths, but also it definitely shows some of our weaknesses. And, we looked at some of the weaknesses that we had in this first outing, and we're definitely going to have to step up to the plate, and starting tonight at practice, we're gonna be working on fixing some of that stuff.
There's always something to work on, right, Al? Now, before I get you out of here, you guys, I believe, play Oakland this week, right?
We do.
And that is a program that you have some very close ties with. Can you explain that, Al?
Well, I was the first head coach for Oakland University several years ago. I helped to start that program, get that program off the ground. And then my defensive coordinator took over for me at Oakland last year. And Oakland went to the national championship last year, actually won the national championship last year. Mm-hmm. But this year, Chris Pickney came on with me, and he's my defensive coordinator, along with several of his staff that he had there. I brought them on with me. So, you know, that's why, you know, I say these kids are getting the best that they can possibly get, you know, when it comes to coaching.
Yeah, they certainly are. And for you, again, you help build what is still at Oakland University. Again, you are the very first head coach there, Al. Is there a bit of nostalgia when you think about playing that team this weekend, and what do you think is going to run through that mind of yours when you are on opposite sidelines of the Grizzlies?
Well, you know what? This weekend is kind of bittersweet, but at the same token, it's what I've tried to explain to the players is, you know, these guys are just as strong as they have been, and you know, winning a national championship last year helped to strengthen that program. And they have some good coaching, and it's going to be a challenge. This will be our ultimate challenge this year. They will probably, before we go into the playoff structure at the end of the year, this will probably be the toughest challenge we're going to meet this year.
Wow. That's going to be an incredible game, I'm sure. Again, you had over 200 fans at the very first game of the season against Ohio State. Were you pleased with the turnout at Hope Sports Complex, Al?
You know what? I got to tell you, they were phenomenal. They screamed and yelled, and they were just wonderful to have. The players felt it, and, you know, they were chanting and you know, clapping and they had a great time. I mean, they had a great time at the game, and that, you know, that was just heartwarming to see. You know, the guys deserve to be supported. You know, they worked hard for it, and you know, people came away from that game on Saturday and they were surprised to see the quality and the caliber of play that they saw. And I think we were all blessed to have them there.
Well, let's hope it only continues to grow as the year moves along, right, Al?
No, I agree. Couldn't agree more.
Without a doubt. Well, more. Al Manfroni, MSU club football head coach. Again, they take on Oakland University this Saturday, I believe, Al, at 2 p.m.?
This Saturday, yep, kickoff at 2 o'clock.
There we go. Al, thank you for your time, and good luck this weekend.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right, folks, let's hit our second break. When we come back, you'll hear from head coach of the MSU football team, Mark D'Antonio, as his troops get ready to take on Rutgers on the road this weekend. We'll also bring you Top 5 Tuesday. What exactly are the top 5 blown calls in sports history? Don't go anywhere. You're tuned into Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mark D'Antonio, addressed the media at Spartan Stadium as they get ready for Rutgers this weekend. Of course, this team has, just going through a lot of injuries. I mean, R.J. Williamson, Jack Conklin. You saw Dennis Wiley go down as well. I mean, just a lot of injuries on this team. Here's what Coach D had to say concerning the health of his squad.
Yeah, a little bit, but I also think the more guys you play, the stronger you get as a football team. And you see that across the country. You see guys playing. And that makes you more experienced. That gives you more diversity in terms of the players that you can play, more depth. And, you know, it's just inevitable. At some point in time, Daquez Dennard got a start because Chris L. Rucker went down. And on and on it goes. And that's how you become – that's how you get your feet wet. You become more productive. You get used to playing in a big-time environment. And they've all been recruited here with the idea that they have the ability to play at this level. And so – that's what we do. We put them in there and try not to put them in there before they're ready, but sometimes you're putting them in there a little bit early, but you also have a certain amount of confidence in those guys. Now, there is something to say, hey, they were number two. They're not as good as your All-American guy, okay, but they can get there, i.e. Dennis Finley was playing very well. I think he'll be an outstanding player for us, but and that was his first time playing, really, so... It's good. These are sometimes the problems create opportunities, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And those opportunities pay forward.
Yeah, Dennis Finley, Jack Conklin, R.J. Williamson, just a few of the injuries that this Spartan squad has had to endure so early in the year. But at the end of the day, it just comes down to winning, right?
The bottom line is you need to win. I don't feel frustration. I felt there was no frustration in that locker room after the game. Guys were excited to play. You know, it's tough to win games. It is tough to win. I don't care who you play. And people spend 80-plus hours as coaches every week to develop a plan with what they have. Players spend 20 hours on mandated, I guess, and then they spend countless hours away from it by themselves trying to figure out how to do things to the best of their ability. So everybody's got a plan coming in. You know, everybody's going to be able to recruit a certain level of player. There's parity in college football. All you have to do is look around. And so when we win, that's a good thing. That's a positive thing. There's no frustration. Their frustration may come when a play happens in a game that you're not successful at or a series. But at the end of the deal, if you win, I don't care how you get there. We've played well before and not won. So bottom line is, do you win?
Yeah, that's very, very true. But there are some that would argue that, you know, hey, you got to make it look good. Style points. You got to blow teams out. Here's D'Antonio again on Just Playing.
The bottom line is every time you line up to play, you're trying to win that particular play or situation. But at the end of the game, you're trying to say, okay, who won the game? And that's how you're ultimately measured. There's been a lot of football games that have been close games here in the past. You know, quite honestly, I remember 2013 where there was a lot of doubt created early in the season. And that doubt changed as the season went forward. But there was a lot of doubt at this point in time at that season. Nobody predicted that we'd be 13-1. The same could be said for last year. So, you know, you just play the games. You line them up and play them. You can't promise people that you're going to win. You can't promise people that you're going to lose or cover the spread. You know, what you can do is promise people that you're going to play the very best you can. You're going to prepare. You're going to play with effort and toughness. And that is so important that you have energy and effort and toughness to every football game. Because usually things work out. We have good players. And we should be right there. And, you know, so the challenge is to go 6-0 before you can do anything beyond that. That's the challenge. And hopefully our players understand that. We talk a lot about that, but there's going to be adversity. There's no smooth road ahead for anybody. There's always adversity. There's always an injury. There's always something that doesn't go right. There's always a young player playing that something doesn't go right for, and you have to pick up the pieces. And some things are things that you can't, that you have no ability to change. Other things you can change. So we concentrate on the things we can change and control, which is not that many sometimes. But I know that all of our players are working hard, and I believe in our players. We dropped a punt. Okay? So the challenge is go back in there and punt again, and he did, and he punted well. So it's no different than missing a tackle. It's the game is played between the lines, and it's extremely difficult to play this game at this level. So our, you know, that's all. You know, we just keep going. I know that there's there's times of frustration for everybody, but we just keep going.
So, yeah, Michigan State, they will travel away from the state of Michigan to take on Rutgers for the very first time. They have not left the state of Michigan to play a college football game yet. So Rutgers at 8 p.m. And I tell you what, this Michigan State football program has had a pretty impressive record away from the friendly confines of Spartan Stadium. But, hey, who's counting, right?
Well, I think we're 17-3 right now since 2010 on the road. But who's counting? Yeah. I just think it's, you know, we try and change things up. We try and stay fresh, and we try and go together. But it's not easy going on the road. There's no question about that. We've had tough games, very difficult games. But our senior class has always led, and we bring our emotion with us, and we have to feed off ourselves. We don't have a crowd there and that type of thing, so we have to feed off each other, and we've just tried to maintain. So I don't really have an answer for you as to why, but I would say players make plays, and we've made plays on the road, and we've made plays at home, but we just keep on grinding.
Again, head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mark D'Antonio. Those were a few snippets from today's presser at the at Spartan Stadium as he addressed his team as they get ready for Rutgers this week on the road. Anything stood out to you there, Isaac? Because, you know, of course, he was asked about the injuries. They have certainly been bitten by the injury bug. And, of course, he was asked about winning with style. I mean, are you disappointed that you have not had a quote-unquote convincing victory thus far? And hey, you know, we knew D'Antonio how he was going to respond with that. When we take it one game at a time, it's all about just getting the win. What do you think?
Well, D'Antonio certainly had a little bit of a up and down streak with reporters recently. He's been going at a few no answers. We don't talk about injuries. In addition to
he's always been like that.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
But he's also got into a little bit of a feud with Graham Couch of LSJ, saying, When Graham Couch responded to D'Antonio's comments that they dominated the fourth quarter, kind of refuting those assertions. So I think he's a little bit sensitive. I think he knows his team needs to step it up slightly. But I also get the feeling that D'Antonio still feels like this team is fully in control.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I mean, when you look at it, I got to ask you this question. This is something that maybe we can also debate on tomorrow's show as well. If Michigan State was to, let's just say hypothetically, this is not going to happen. I'm just saying hypothetically, if Michigan State was to just squeak out victories but stayed undefeated, would you put them in the college football playoff?
Without a doubt. Definitely. Winner of the Big 12, beating Ohio State, yeah, you got to.
So if they won by like 1 point against the rest of their schedule, would you put them in the college football playoff?
Yes, I think there are certain teams with that mentality. I think LSU did that when I was a kid. Sometimes you just win, baby, win.
Okay. I'm kind of sour right now. We didn't get to go to our top five Tuesday. It was going to be a good one. We'll postpone it to tomorrow, but it was going to be our top five blown calls in sports history. We need more hours in the day, folks, I tell you. But thank you to Al Manfroni, who is the head MSU club football coach, for joining me on today's show. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Same time, same place tomorrow. Take care and be easy, people.